So to continue our sermon series, John is going to come and he's going to talk, but before that, we will all read the scripture together. As soon as it's on the screen. All right. People were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hand on them. But the disciples rebuked them. When Jesus saw this, he said to them, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." And he took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. Let us welcome John with a big clap.
I'm getting really tired of phone calls where the first thing they say is, "Do not hang up." I do automatically. I just hang up, but I'm still tired of them. So the reason this is a priority message is because we're talking about priority, not because it's the most important thing you've ever heard. But this is the chapter about from the Growing Young book, where it talks about prioritizing young persons in the church and prioritizing them throughout the church. And this was a particularly interesting chapter to me. And I actually wanted to do next week's on being a good neighbor, but Rajiv traded with me, and so here I am. So the way this fits, can we get my slides up? Are they coming soon? There we go. Let's go to the next one. So in the six core commitments that this book describes, we've already talked about the key chain leadership and empathizing with young people, with Jesus's message, with warm relationships. This morning we're going to be talking about prioritizing young people everywhere. And then next week we'll talk about the last one, best neighbors. So this fits in as the number 5 in the puzzle, and that means we're on the downhill slope of this whole series, and so you can take a breath, it'll be over soon. So how is prioritization, next slide, different from empathy and different from warmth, those other two things we've talked about? So empathizing means, you know, listening for and understanding young people's journey toward identity and toward belonging and toward purpose. That's what empathy is about. Warmth is the way that we surround them with supportive, accepting, and authentic community. It's the relationships we build with young people, and it's the quality of those relationships. Hopefully, it isn't all telling them what to do and being mean, like one of my two grandmother examples from a few weeks ago. But it's really entering into relationships that are meaningful, that are warm, that are family, that are hard to walk away from. Prioritizing is a little bit different. So prioritizing represents the things that we do in terms of our institutional commitment, but also in terms of all of our individual decisions as individuals, as part of this body, to allocate resources, to allocate our attention across the whole life of the congregation. So an interesting thing to me about this chapter is that the authors of the study admit that this was a surprising finding. Now, I love science, and I especially love it when someone discovers something they didn't expect to discover, when the experiment shows something different than what the hypothesis was, right? So they thought, we're going to see this, and then we saw this, and now had to really think about, what does that mean? And this is what happened here. These people may not be really true scientists from the, you know, get their fingers in the chemicals kind of standpoint, but they really did a good job with the research. And the research showed them, surprisingly, that this being prioritizing young persons everywhere throughout the church was actually the top response category as people responded about why their church was successful in working with young people. So it was tied with the leadership issues, but it was the, you know, the two of those were the number one thing. They didn't expect to see that. They thought it would be perfectly okay if a fourth of the church really paid attention to young persons and the other three-fourths of the church did something else. Turns out that that isn't true. What the research actually found is that this was the you know, tied for number one. This is the big deal. And that's why on that circle, they show the little arrow that exits the circle that says growing old. If you don't get this one thing right, even if you get everything else right, it doesn't help. Your church will not have a decreasing average age. You won't have all of those young people around. So priority was mentioned in half of the responses, or just over half of the responses that they got, but in terms of prioritizing everywhere. And that's startling. You hear all kinds of different responses, and then you have to dig into it, right? But in those survey responses, where it was free form, where they weren't just, answering, rating 1 through 4 on some question, right? Priority was kept appearing. So I thought that I understood. Oh, well, actually, let's go on to the next slide. So let's talk for a second about what it isn't. And this is something we heard over and over again as we got together in Sacramento. There we go. The answer is not hire a youth pastor, and it isn't let the youth own the basement and build a volleyball court somewhere. I've seen churches that have that sort of attitude about young persons. And there's a great story from someone that many of you people know. Lee Nesh was the associate pastor here at this church when I was the youth director here. And he left in 1990, and he went to Gilroy. And he got to Gilroy as the senior pastor at that church. And he started working with the people in that congregation and asked people to come to his house for dinner. And so he's having dinner with, he and his wife were inviting 8 people at a time because they had 10 plates and 10 sets of silver, and that's how many fit around the table. So 8 at a time, everyone in the congregation was coming over, and of course he was meeting with all the different groups in the congregation and starting to feel like he was actually, starting to make progress in getting to know folks. And he was in his office about 3 weeks after he'd been there, and a woman timidly knocked on the door and asked if she could talk to him, and he said, "Sure, come in and sit down." And before she was seated, she was crying. And so then he immediately said, "What's happening?" And she goes, "Are you going to?" And he said, "Fire you?" And she said, "You haven't called me. You haven't talked to me. You haven't come over to see what I'm doing. Are you planning me? Just fire me. This is disappearing on the internet. Let me trade hands. See if that helps." and he said, "Who are you?" And it turns out she was his youth director, and no one in the SPRC knew that church had a youth director, and he had never heard her name. He had no idea there was a youth group going on. She had been hired about 5 or 6 years before by not the previous pastor, but the pastor before that pastor, and she was meeting with the youth once a week, not on Sunday mornings, at a different time, at a different building, offsite from the church. And her only connection to the church through most of the previous pastor was getting a check every month for her salary. She was a 5-hour-a-week employee of the church. The SPRC didn't know that she was there. Lee didn't know she was there. Her salary didn't actually show up as a separate budget line item. And so Lee had an employee reporting to him for 3 weeks that he met when she came and asking if she was being fired. So it can be really bad the way that a church operates with young people and with the young people program, but it isn't a program, and that's not what this book is talking about. This book is talking about culture, not program. So here we go. Let's go on to the next slide. So I thought I knew what this chapter was going to talk about, to be honest, because my home church, let's go to the next slide, please. My home church, when I was growing up, really did prioritize young people everywhere. So we're having problems, huh? Let's give it a second. There we go. So the longtime senior pastor in my home church had a real passion for young people. And even before he was hired by that church, he was in a different state, and he was nationally known as a speaker who was available to speak at youth events, at youth camps, and at those kinds of things. He also had a real passion for young families, for families with children. And that was something that the church knew about him when the church hired him, and he came to the church and brought that passion with him. After he'd been there a while, he hired a youth pastor from outside the conference. Now, this was someone who had been very involved in Young Life. It's a Christian organization for high school age and college age people. And in fact, The youth pastor had been previously in Los Angeles working for Young Life, where he had 2,400 kids a week coming to his Young Life events, where they rented a high school gymnasium and packed it out. And the way they met is that Young Life guy also had a summer camp that he was running, and he invited Roy, the nationally known speaker, the senior pastor, to come and speak to that conference. And they roomed together that week. They shared a cabin as a sort of camp director and speaker. So the tables turned because the senior pastor had been running a high school camp for several years, and so brought this potential youth pastor in to be the speaker at that camp. So they traded places between camp director and speaker between two camps in one summer. And for the next year, that senior pastor was hounding this man to say, come be the youth pastor at my church. Actually, he was saying, come be the associate pastor. And the youth pastor said, no, if I come, I'm going to be the youth pastor. I'm going to be responsible only for you. You're not going to saddle me with all the other stuff that an associate pastor has to do. That's not what I'm good at. That's not where my ministry is. That's not what I'm being called to do. So it took a little while to convince the church, but they hired this person on a full-time basis to come and just be the youth minister. So that youth pastor turned out to, as this book described, to actually really be a keychain leader. So he wasn't at that church very long before he got young adults involved in working with the youth program, leading music, being counselors, setting up activities and things. And that's an interesting part of how that worked for me. Let's go, to worship. Related to worship, the youth pastor and the senior pastor took worship on as a team. The two of them were always in front of that sanctuary, and they had a very comfortable dialogue between them through the whole part of worship. Some of it was joking. Some of it was mild insults. It was all very supportive. It was obvious that they were friends, that they were a team, that they cared about the same things, and it made that worship really, really fun and interesting as a high school kid. The high school kids also had a youth choir, and that choir sang 52 weeks a year for the entire time I was in high school and through to my college time as well. So the adult choir took summers off, and I know that because my mom was the choir director, but not the kids. The kids covered through the summer. You know, sometimes you'd be gone for vacation or something, but that choir was just always there. Now, the choir was made up, when I was in high school, about 60 kids, and a lot of their friends came to worship also, just to see them perform and to be with them, sit with them, and be part of that experience. So at that church, even though the average attendance my junior year in high school was 100, and I know this because, was 400 over two services, and I know this because I had to fill out the forms that year for annual conference, high school age youth attending the worship services was just over 100 on average. And the youth attending the youth group during was about 200 on average. So, or maybe just a little bit more. But the youth did more than just sing in that youth choir. They also read scripture, gave lay witnesses. Youth would come up and talk about their faith and what was happening. And the youth were the ones that invited congregations, the rest of the congregation, into all church activities. So an awful lot of the all church activities, let's flip in to the next page and we'll talk about families a bit, but were things that were kind of centered around the youth and the young adults in that church. Now, families started appearing around that youth group also because a number of the youth that got pulled into the youth group because they were friends of other kids in the youth group ended up bringing their families to church. Their parents wanted to see what was going on, and they had younger siblings. And so it fleshed out a lot of the other parts of the church in terms of children. And so an awful lot of adults in the church got scripted into teaching Sunday school, and the Sunday school classes started being narrower and narrower instead of in terms of age. So instead of having a Sunday school class for grades 1 through 4, all of a sudden there was a class for 1 and 2 and another class for 3 and 4 because they didn't fit in the little rooms in the building. Those parents were invited to attend small groups. So that church had faith-centered prayer groups. It had training for lay witness missions and other things that were happening. And the church events started changing to include those families. Also, about the same time, a college group, within a year or two after this youth group exploded, a college group, because the graduates of that youth group didn't want to just walk away. They wanted to continue to be together, and they wanted to continue to be involved in the church. And it was a self-directed, self-started college group, because the youth pastor said, college isn't my thing. Youth is my thing. If you're going to do something, here, you be in charge. He helped them out, helped the leaders out. But, it's doing that again, key chain leadership. Here's the church keys. Pick a time. You're in charge. Let's make this group happen. And at the time that I graduated from high school, went into the college group, it was about 45 people. Now, there was support across the church for all of that stuff. So I had the chance to talk to Carl Cottrell a couple of months ago, and talked about the things that attracted him about Good Sam when he and Marlene first visited. And one of it wasn't everything, but one of the things he said was that there were so many youth involved in the service and with the youth group singing. Oh, so if you figured out, my home church is here. This is the church where I grew up, and this is the church I'm talking about. But Carl said that that the vibrancy and the things that were happening with all the youth in the church was a very attractive thing in terms of visiting the church and wanting to be a part of it. So there were other things that attracted him as well, and maybe you can talk to Carl later and find those out, because they're also very interesting. But for the most part, the adults were very glad to have the youth take that active role, all across the church. And I think part of that was it did make things more interesting and more exciting. A lot more things happened because it was driven by young people in that church in many ways. Not everything, but a lot of stuff was. And a lot of the big church occasions that people talked about for years afterwards were really things that... And just because the youth made them happen. I talked to that youth pastor on Friday, and we spent about an hour and a half on the phone, and just kind of talked about that whole process. Because when he first showed up, I was still in grade school, and I wasn't as aware of what was happening at the church as I was when he left. And I asked him, so how difficult was it to get the church to commit to the things you wanted to have happen in order to have that emphasis on young people? And he said that he could only remember one situation across his entire 7 years here where there was any pushback at all from, in terms of financial support or facilities or calendar. And it turns out that pushback was actually about whether the church should be spending money for him to be talking to youth when he showed a movie called Question the Establishment that was about the Vietnam War. And this one... older member of the congregation was very disturbed that this was, seditious or un-American or something. But it certainly generated a lot of conversation in that youth group and related what was happening in the world around them to what was in the Bible and what we believe that God wants us to do. And so, very powerful thing. But that's the only time he ever remembers anyone in the church actually pushing back about that emphasis across the church on young people. I know that the church, that the young people, high school kids, college age kids, people out of college that were young adults, were very involved across the church. And part of how I know that is that my senior year in high school, I served on the administrative board, similar to today's church council for this church, and got to see the various selections and elections and the membership on those committees and stuff. So let's go to the next slide. As a kid, we all knew that we were important to the church, right? We were aware, and we knew that we were integrated with the church. So we were aware that that we weren't just a separate organization that happened, five nights a week in a part of the building, that we were integrated with the rest of it. I think back about all church events like the church camping weekend or picnics, special worship services that happened outside the facility in parks or Easter sunrise service or, different social events, bringing a big band in and dancing or the softball league that that was as good as it was because of all the young people on the team. Gardening days, where I'm standing now, used to be a gravel parking lot, and the outsides of this parking lot were usually weeds, and occasionally we would try and make them something different, and that was across all generations of the church. Various milestone celebrations. The young adults and the older adults and the children, everybody was a part of all of those things. And there were adults that got to know us individually and know our names. You know, there are people that really stand out for doing an amazing job of that. And there was a guy that you always saw walking in the door wearing a wide, loud tie named Riley Wismuth. And Riley knew the names of probably 60 or 70 of the 100 kids who were usually here on Sunday mornings and greeted us by name and let us know he was happy to have us. There were other people, let me not get into that. There were other people that certainly made their relationship with those youth known, that knew our names and that we knew their names. It wasn't all Pollyanna, right? And sometimes things went wrong. And I remember half a dozen cases maybe where one of my friends had a home life that wasn't as easy and wonderful as mine and suddenly found themselves actually needing a place to live. And the church, not just the youth group, but the entire church rallied around those people and found places for them to be and supported them. So I do want to, let's go to the next one. I do want to tell one story just to describe some of the dynamics here. We had at the church a little Hammond organ that sounded kind of like a cheap imitation of something halfway between a circus calliope and a grand cathedral pipe organ, and then it died. And the organist was very anxious to have a replacement organ. My mom, the choir director, was very anxious to have a replacement organ. The choir was all in favor of it, and the thing was incredibly expensive, right? So the committee had, there were two electronic organ companies at the time, Allen and Rogers. No one had anything different than one of those two companies. And so a committee was formed, and they went to other churches where that church had a particularly good installation of either an Allen organ or a Rogers organ, and they auditioned it. People who knew how to play got to play it, got to listen to it, got to hear the sales pitches. There's some technology stuff that was kind of fun. The Rogers organ at the time was a completely analog device. The Allen organ was a computerized organ. This was Silicon Valley. And the thought that you could change the sounds of the organ by putting punch cards in it. I'm serious, punch cards into the organ was something that was very intriguing to all of the engineers that made up the core of the older adults here. And so the Allen was chosen, even though it was a little bit more expensive than the Rogers, and now it had to be sold to the congregation because this was an expense that was not in the budget. So Roy Dunn, the senior pastor, had home meetings and created, I think, 11 different meetings over a two-week period and invited roughly 20 people to each meeting, and people were invited to specific meetings. And at every one of those 11 meetings, there were high school kids there, there were college-age kids, there were people out of college but young adults there. And at the meeting that I went to, a good friend of mine who was in college at the time, Dave Hibbert, had an attitude that guitars were the future, that we shouldn't spend money on an organ. There were lots of good things to spend money on. Organ wasn't one of them. And nobody likes the organ music anyway, kind of an attitude. And as he was talking, Grandma Anderson, who was probably in her 60s at that point, just started crying, tears running down her cheeks. And she said, "David, please don't take away the organ from us. This is what we grew up with. This is the most meaningful music for me and for a lot of my friends." The reason she said it the way she said it is because even she recognized that if the youth got moving in a direction, that's where the church was going to go. And she could imagine if the youth are all saying we don't need an organ, there wouldn't be an organ. And she really didn't want that future for the church. And so what she did is instead of arguing against it, she said, "Please don't do this. Understand how important this is." And Dave backed off, halfway off. He said, well, okay, let's just buy a Heath kit and we'll build it, and that'll be a lot cheaper. So the soldering irons never happened, and we ended up with an Allen organ. So it turns out that the book talks about different things than what I expected it to talk about based on my experience with this church growing up here and having that really highly integrated church process that was very, very interested in supporting what young adults were doing. So let me get back to what the book talks about that was a little bit surprising to me. One of them is that prioritizing young people means prioritizing families too. And I didn't see that as a youth, to be honest, at this church. The parents were never involved directly in youth group things except for the kinds of stuff that everyone was invited to, right? The parents were certainly a part of anything that was an all-church event. If we had a spaghetti dinner or an ice cream social or we threw a play or we did the camping trip or the picnic or whatever, parents and everybody else came. But when we went to Disneyland, no parents. When we went to the snow for a weekend, no parents. When we went to summer camp, no parents. Right? Parents weren't involved. And what we're finding is that in churches today that are being successful with young people, that the young people's families are definitely involved. Now, that might be their parents. It might be their children. If we're talking about people in their 20s, many of them have kids. Right? And the churches that are effective are dealing with them as complete families. And when you're talking, whatever family you're talking about, when you're talking about the children of the family, the only way to be effective with those children is to understand that engagement in terms of the systems in which they're embedded, and their family is the biggest, most important system in place around those people. So despite these sort of decades of common practice in youth programs where we say the youth are important, their parents aren't, current finding is it's not true, that we have to engage the families and we have to partner with families for that to work right. And I guess maybe the reason that they say is obvious that didn't occur to me until I read this book is that on those children, their parents' influence matters more than the church influence. And the parents also, as more today than then, need support. And the church needs to be able to offer that support and be a part of helping those parents to be a positive influence on those children. But what do you do about kids that are involved in church when their parents aren't? Right? So in my experience, for several of my friends, this church became their surrogate family. And they were as attached to this church as probably as they were to their own family. And again, the research here leads us to understand that you can make some assumptions about those parents who don't come to church, where the kids are part of the church, the parents are not. Let's assume that they love their kids and they want to do right by them. I think that's an easy assumption. And let's assume that they love them more than we do because they're in that family and they're parents and they've been together. And I remember becoming a new dad. And that relationship with that little thing that was in my hand was something I'd never experienced before. There is something real about those parent connections, and recognizing that and working with that is very important. So then let's make it our job, not their job, to reach out and initiate a relationship. Don't wait for the parents to show up and say, "What the heck are you doing with my kids?" Let's engage the parents, even if they aren't engaged themselves, and say, we want to talk to you. Your child has been involved in this this program or process or whatever, and we just want to tell you what's going on and what we're seeing in your child in terms of growth and development and new skills and things that we're really, really pleased to see and we want you to know about because we think you'd want to know. So part of that is building, empathy and understanding with parents, right? So this is an interesting finding to me and one I hadn't thought about, but it makes sense as you read through the book and look at it. Let's go to the next slide. So I'm going to shift just a little bit. So another piece of this in terms of prioritizing young people everywhere is that young people need to have what they call a load-bearing role. So in a house, right? Some walls are not load-bearing. You can knock them over and nothing happens to the house. Other walls are load-bearing, and you take them out at your own peril because the ceiling might collapse and the floor above you may come down where you are. Load-bearing roles in a church are those roles where if they're missing, the church has trouble. We notice that there's a gap, things go wrong. And so when young people are invited to participate and they know that they're needed, they're playing a load-bearing role at that point, because if you lose them, things go wrong with the church. So we want young people to become purposeful co-participants rather than junior assistant participants or future members, right? Those kinds of thoughts about their involvement are not helpful. Being completely engaged on an equal basis, that's what's helpful. So if that's the case, then their voices, their hands, their hearts matter, and they matter now, and they know it. And all of those things are essential. So to expand on that just a little bit more, on the next page, we're not looking for young people to be volunteers. We're looking for young people to be participants. I don't know why this hand works and this hand doesn't. My science brain is spinning wildly now, and I'm going to have to spend some time with this. Volunteers give of their time, you know, or they give their energy or whatever, and it's kind of like a civic duty. But participants, they're contributing essential work, and that work binds them with the other people that are contributing essential work. So they become, you know, members of the body, part of the family. When you're a volunteer, it's a consumer relationship. You're consuming whatever it is the organization can offer you as a volunteer. Organization is consuming your volunteerism, right? They're consuming your time and your energy. But when you're a participant, it's a covenant relationship. You're in an agreement to work together because you agree on what it is you're trying to accomplish, and you support each other and want to work together on that. And so a lot of these churches, the leadership is intentional about using the language of participation rather than using the language of volunteers. So they never have an announcement where they say, we need volunteers next Saturday to do X, Y, Z. Because they're thinking it through, they end up talking about it in terms of way that, you know, we want people to participate with us to do this thing next Saturday, and we hope you'll join us. Let's go to the next slide. There have been a lot of words on these slides and not many pictures, so this is just a gratuitous picture of a puppy. For those of you at home, looks like that. Okay, let's go to the next slide. So the piece of this looking from the church population toward the young people is that we need to see young people, see them for more than what they just do, right? So prioritizing young people because of what they can do can collapse very easily into just cheap labor. And as the parent of a couple young persons, I can tell you that they can spot requests for cheap labor before you even think to ask, and that doesn't go over well. And so we have to recognize that young people contribute to our church just because of who they are. Now, thinking about that puppy for a second, puppies chew on things they shouldn't, and they pee places we wish they wouldn't, and they don't stop doing that when you yell at them, and they don't come when you call. And it isn't because of what they do that we like puppies. It's because of who they are. And maybe there's a parallel there that you can think about. So, you know, one suggestion that they give to church leadership is find skills that young people have or that they'd like to have where that skill would help them be better participants in the church. And work with them on developing that skill, and praise them for having that skill, and use that skill in order to make that engagement. So instead of just saying, hey, you're strong, let's move tables, say, hey, you have an aptitude toward, I don't know, making beautiful looking slides. You know, would you be willing to work with us and help make some of the slides better? Or, you know, other technology areas or music, you know, playing in the band, whatever it is. But that means getting to know them enough to knowing what those skills are that they have, and or learning what it is that they might be interested in learning as a skill. What do they want to do with their life, and what do they need to have that they don't have now to get there? And how can we help them with that and take advantage of that in a way that lets them be participants with us in the life of the body? There's a couple of myths that the book specifically wants to bust because they saw churches that believe these things did not succeed in these areas. And so one of them is good leaders and the right programs automatically lead to having the right priority and having the right involvement. It turns out that's a myth. You can have really good leaders and you can develop the most amazing programs and it doesn't help. That's not enough. It takes a constant commitment to working with that age range and supporting, you know, young people in order to make that integration really happen. And there's also a myth that some churches have that, you know, good intentions are enough, right? We really want to do the right thing and we smile. What more do you need, right? So they claim that a common phrase in business is that culture eats strategy for breakfast. I've never heard that phrase, but I understand what it's trying to get to. And maybe that's because I worked for a company for a long time that had a good culture and didn't have to spend too much time on strategy. And that's that if the culture of an organization moves the organization in a specific direction, that's going to be much more effective than if you just create and announce a strategy to move in that direction. And so one of the things that's said later on in this book that's a really key thing is that this book is not about program, it's about strategy. My assistant has just flashed me the time, so I'm going to speed up here a bit. Let's go to the three important questions. They asked three questions in a whole lot of areas as they were doing the research with the churches. And the questions were not always in this order, there was a question about how important is it to you that the congregation blah, 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 and how intentional is your congregation about planning blah, 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 and the blah, blah, blah can be replaced by many different things through the course of the thing, and then what percentage of your congregation participates in whatever this is, right? So this is importance and intentionality and action, and what they found is if you don't have action, if you aren't answering that a majority of your congregation participates in it, it isn't helpful. It's not working. So there's an overwhelmingly strong correlation with a bunch of different things, with vibrancy, with higher faith maturity, and many other variables to where the majority of the congregation is engaged and actually involved in action. So one thing I'm going to ask you to do, and especially you folks at home, because the offering plate didn't go past you a little while ago, is last week we started talking about the scholarship fund for young people in our church. I want to let you know, last year we gave out checks of $100 or more to 23 young people associated with our church to help them with scholarship of college. And Carolyn especially asked me last week, and I failed to do this, to let you know that there were several of those people who came back to the Christmas Eve service and Christmas Sunday because they had that break from college. Even one young lady who was here to do that, even though her family, her mom now lives somewhere else, she came here and her mom met her here and they came to church on Christmas Eve so they could thank the church for that scholarship, even though mom lives in a different place and that's where she eventually went for the rest of her vacation. There was a young lady that Carolyn had never met that found out who Carolyn was because she had that letter signed by Carolyn, you know, from the church explaining what the scholarship check was about and wanted to say thank you in person. We saw these people coming back and wanting to express that thanks and that relationship with the church because of this fund. Right now we're collecting money in that scholarship fund so that we can do that again this year with the approximately 20 kids that we have that are still in college. So I'd like to invite you, since the offering plate has already been passed or has missed you folks on the phone, that to pull out your smartphone and send a text message to 77977 and put in that message, Good Sam UMC, all one word, no spaces, capitalization doesn't matter. You'll get a response text back. click on the URL in that response, and it'll take you right to PushPay, directly connected to our church. It's a completely safe way to give money to the church. When it takes you there, you'll see a little pull-down menu that says General Fund. Go ahead and pull that down and pick Scholarship or Scholarships. And once you've selected that, put in however much money you want to give, and that will go directly into the scholarship fund that will end up being checks that will go to these students. So I'd encourage you to do that now. If you are at home and you need to pay by check and you don't want to do the electronic thing, mail it to the church or hand it to Rajiv or to Carolyn or to me, and we'll make sure it goes to the right place. So this is action we can take as a community today to show at least one set of young people that they're important to us and that we want to participate with them. So there were five ideas for action in the book, and I'll hit these really fast. One is rethink the numbers. A lot of churches imagine their success or count their success based on counting heads at worship. I didn't see any ushers in the back while I was talking, you know, doing the 1, 2, 3, 4 thing like I do sometimes. But maybe that's not the right way to measure success with engagement with young people. Part of what young people are involved. This is driving me crazy. I'm sorry. How are young people involved in other ways? And, which ones are coming to the young people's group and not coming to worship? Which ones are actually involved in activities at the church, like working with the preschool during worship and not here so that we don't see them? So how do we, which ones are in college and we don't see, because they're in college somewhere else, and we don't see except when they come and visit, you know, at Christmas time or in the summer? And so part of it is rethinking how do you count whether you're successful. They recommend that you assess everything that the church does. All the different programs in the church, all the activities of the church should be reviewed to see, is this something that includes or excludes or ignores young persons? And can we make minor changes, right? So that's the simple question. The simple question to ask after you do that assessment is, what can we do in order to include young people in this program, in this activity, in this ministry? They recommend that we purposefully hire. I'll leave that to the SPRC. And I know that you're looking at Hope Crockett, and I really hope that you decide to give her a shot as an interim youth director with us right now. Revisit fundraisers. Turns out some churches are happy to have the youth do fundraising in order to raise money for the youth activities, but they don't actually support them with the budget. So while the fundraising gives the youth something to do and they feel good about the money that they raised, they also feel like the church doesn't care about them because they have to raise all their own money. And so there's with your children, there's a difference between making them work and giving them an allowance, and you have to balance those kinds of things, right? So don't eliminate fundraisers, but take a look at them and make sure that you're not asking young people to raise all of their money for all the things that they want to do. Address family pain and brokenness through support. So part of this is, what can we do to support the families of the young people, their children and their parents, especially, you know, the ones that are having a difficult time. We talked about prioritizing partnering with parents. Another recommendation was get rid of Youth Sunday. A lot of churches have a Youth Sunday, and for many of those churches, that's the only engagement the youth have with worship. So they would much rather see young people involved every week rather than there be a Youth Sunday where they're involved and then they disappear the rest of the time. That for us old folks, they talk about leveraging technology. Don't obsess over it. You know, it doesn't need to be the entire focus of the church for a while. But take advantage of the technology that exists. Now, earlier, Rajiv asked people who aren't getting the church emails to please, give us your email. That might have actually not been the right thing to say. The right thing to say may have been, if you're not getting our emails, please tell us how you would like to be contacted, and we should be ready to do it other ways. Because if you're not an email person, adding your email to our list isn't going to help because you're still not going to see it, right? So that's the kind of thing we should be thinking about, especially with young persons. How do they want to be contacted? How do they want to be reached? And diversify ministry. Now, diversify ministry, when you read the book, there's a lot of good examples of having, for instance, a gathering in a bar instead of on the church campus, because the young folks are comfortable there and they're willing to talk there. That's a place where they go and expect to be able to have conversations with their friends. And it doesn't have, the trappings of the church that make people uncomfortable. They had other examples as well. So for my final slide, wanted to point out, you know, this is called Follow Jesus' Lead, right? In Mark chapter 9, we had a similar situation to what we just read about. The disciples were kicking children and their families out, getting rid of them away from Jesus. And Jesus said in Mark chapter 9, whoever welcomes, 9:37 if you care, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. Now, what he was saying there is a command essentially to the disciples to welcome children, right? Just one chapter later, the disciples are kicking children out again. You would think they would remember from chapter 9 to chapter 10 that this is not the right thing to do, but no, they're getting rid of the kids. And when Jesus saw that, he was indignant. And he said to them, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. That's striking. Jesus moved from a command to welcome children to a command to become like children. And to me, that sounds an awful lot like a command to grow young.